The Inside Ellen Road podcast is sponsored by PR Supplies at Unit 2 Wither Park Industrial Estate, Leeds, postcode LS53AP. Check out PR Supplies on Facebook for all your home retail needs. Hello and welcome to the Inside Ellen Road podcast with me, Joe Donoghue, and your YEP chief football writer, Graeme Smith. We're recording after Jesse Marsh's pre-match press conference ahead of the Brentford game on Sunday and following your first encounter with club record signing Jorginho Rutter, Graeme. How did you find him? Was it like your GCSE French speaking exam at all?
A-level. He was charming. He was lovely. Very, very nice kid. Very smiley. He seemed to be enjoying himself. You know, it didn't seem to be in any way a nerve-wracking experience for him. He was aided by the interpreter extraordinaire, Phil Dickinson, Spy Rights fan, who was the man who did Bielsa's first ever press conference, I believe, at Ellen Road. So Phil has a great way with players, very much puts them at ease. But Rutter certainly seems like the kind of chap who doesn't really mind being in company, it was good. It was a good first encounter. We talked about football a little bit, talked about his background, talked about his initiation song, and his his astonishment at a room full of, you know, predominantly white, middle class, balding British journalists not being aware of his song of choice. I thought it was very endearing indeed. He even tried to sing it, and he was genuinely baffled, I think, that at the blank looks that came back at him.
What was the song choice, just out of interest?
Papa 2A is the artist, I think.
That's the song name.
That's the song. Well, there you go. I've had a little bit of kickback on Twitter for not knowing this, but
the younger generation of balding journalists maybe knows a little bit more.
To say the least. There's two occasions when the generational gap was evident during that press conference with Jorginho, and that was one occasion, and the other was when I asked him what he knew of Bamford and Rodrigo, and he wanted to know what I know now or what I knew then, and I said, well, either, both, and he said he knows from the other night how much the fans appreciate both players, which is a good answer, but from before he knows Rodrigo from PlayStation, because he used to use Rodrigo. In fact, he would pair himself and Rodrigo up top in a front two.
Be good, though, wouldn't it? If you were playing FIFA or Football Manager or Championship Manager, whatever it is, and you were able to use yourself. I've always wondered that.
Yeah, I mean, I get a slight thrill playing Championship Manager 102 every time the Yorkshire Evening Post has an article that says that, you know, a Leeds player is underperforming. Or there's a transfer rumor that comes out from the Yorkshire Evening Post. I think it's
because
brilliant.
You'd love to report something so daring.
Yeah. or that a player wants out, you know, doesn't like the manager. More on that. We'll come to that later. Rutter paired himself with Rodrigo because Rodrigo was quick in the game. He did very, very well. Very impressive. Said that the dressing room had mostly welcomed him in French, with lots of bonjours and ça va's. I would like to know the full extent of that. You know, who ventured a bit further than bonjour, ça va? I know that Bamford speaks a bit of French. Obviously, Ian Melier knows Rutter from their young days, and he's consulted the goalkeeper ahead of moving to Leeds. I would like to know if anyone was a bit braver and tried, you know, Oué la boulangerie
You don't know where the bakery is, Graeme. He's just got here. He doesn't know Thorpe Arch well enough yet.
No, he doesn't know where the bakery section is of Thorpe Arch.
Not that he'd be allowed to go in there.
No, exactly. It's interesting, isn't it? That's one thing that Bielsa never installed, was a bakery, because he knows the perils of toast and croissants and baguettes for an athlete. Jorginho Rutter, he enjoyed Ellen Road. He said it was magic, for the simple reason that he's already heard his name sung at Ellen Road. Something that I think we should discuss, because I'm not sure that will stick, that initial first song which was essentially his name, Jorginho. And I think it was to the tune of all leads our way.
Jorginho, sort of. Jorginho.
And I don't know, slightly incongruous to me, slightly ill-fitting.
Well, I mean, we don't really want to get too bogged down in the discussion of songs by the Leeds United faithful at the moment, considering that this one is actually...
I think
it's actually appropriate.
If we're going to talk songs, let's entirely talk this one on this podcast. I feel like there's better to come. And I'm sure some absolute genius is going to come up with one. I was thinking about it. I might write about this for the YAP because it's whimsical and entirely inconsequential. But the Rodrigo song, I used to have a suspicion that Rodrigo song was so popular because it's so catchy that they enjoyed, you know, when you really enjoy singing a song. Like, I don't particularly enjoy the music of Snow Patrol, but there's one or two of their songs that I really enjoy singing if it comes on in the car. And I wondered the same with that Rodrigo song. However, with his form this season and the goals he's scoring, it's almost like he's justifying the song's popularity with his performances. And he's reclaimed it. Like, he's reclaimed the song. It's now not just a great song and catchy. It's a deserved song. It's just a thought that I had.
So are you trying to say in a very roundabout way that Jorginho Rutter hasn't earned his Jorginho song yet? Because he hasn't done anything to earn it. And Rodrigo, only after 2.5 years in England, is now worthy of a song which goes, Rodrigo Moreno, and then just loads of whoa.
That's incredible. Am I twisting your words? You're twisting my words in the way that journalists do. I'm not saying he's ill-deserving of a song. I'm saying that the song was slightly ill-fitting because I don't feel like the name fit exactly to the tune for each section of the tune, is what I'm saying. It was like Robin Koch wearing Willy Nyonto's shorts. It would just be not quite the right fit. So I think there's better to come. But he really enjoyed hearing his name, Ellen Road. And I think he's not quite 100%, he says, but he feels good. And Jesse Marsh says he looked good in training. So I think we may possibly, depending on the game state, we may see him at some stage on Sunday against Brentford. It won't be from the start, because how could it? Well, I'm glad I asked you that, Joe, because that's what I want to talk about. I asked Jesse, are you considering possibly moving to a two? Because you've got these three strikers in now, in goal-scoring machine Rodrigo, Bamford, who's back with a bang, and now the new boy, Jorginho Rutter. Marsh has had gone with the two in the past, and he talked about flexibility. So I was going to ask you, where do you see that happening, or when would you see that happening?
When could Leeds viably use two up top? I think it would probably have to be when you're a bit more confident, probably more home games than away games. And at the moment, when there haven't really been that many games where you're going into them thinking, we can actually take something from this, you know, we can take 3 points from this, where there's a decent likelihood, then it's obviously very difficult to. I also don't think there's a huge argument to change the attacking setup, because the chances are being created. It's the defense for me, which is where the issues of lay. You know, I think the Nyonto sort of on that left-hand side of an attacking three really works. Rodrigo's obviously got 12 goals in 20 games. That's clearly working. The right-hand side, there's plenty of options there. You can have Aronson there, you can have Somerville, you can have Sinisterra. I think Rutter said today that he was able to play sort of off a front man on either side, so you could feasibly play him there as well. It depends. I mean, we don't know. Rodrigo might pull up with an injury against Brentford. He might be out for the season. Obviously, we hope that doesn't happen, but, you know, there are a lot of eventualities here. Personally, I don't think going two up top would be the right call right now, but I mean, that's why I am just a mere word twisty journalist, and Jesse Marsh is the manager, and Jorginho Rutter is the FIFA expert.
I think probably similar. I think he moved to the 4-3-3 to give them more protection defensively, I think. And you're right, at that end of the pitch, it's not really too much of a problem. because if you think of the last three games, scored two against Cardiff, could have scored more, scored one against Villa, could have scored four or five, scored five against Cardiff in the replay, could have scored nine, five of those by Willy Nyonto. So I also saw Jack Harrison put on his social media a graphic of some chance creation stats, and he's actually creating a lot of chances per game, per 90. So he's not exactly having a shocker when it comes to making chances. And with Nyonto in the form he's in, you don't want to move him, really, do you? The only way you take him out of a game is if you're winning it, to rest him at the minute, even though he's young. And a time may come where Marsh has to ease back a little bit because he is only 19. But now's probably not that time.
No, I think you have to ride this wave. You know, he's playing probably the best football he ever has at the highest level. Why would you take him out?
Yeah. Yeah, let's talk about him a little bit. Marsh said, was asked today, how do you keep his feet on the ground after, you know, the other night? And I could hear the answer before it even came out of his mouth. He said,
are you trying to say Jesse Marsh is predictable in press conferences?
No, I'm saying that Willy Nyonto, the answer about Willy Nyonto is predictable, because the answer was keeping his feet, that won't be a problem, keeping his feet on the ground. I have more of a problem keeping Cree's feet on the ground.
Cree's out here catching strays.
He's not even playing. Not even playing, and he's still being kicked. So yeah, that amused me. I do wonder how, like, is Somerville like the class joker that the teacher, you know, absolutely hammers, much to everyone's delight, and the joker quite likes it, you know, plays along, or is he just completely oblivious to this? Like, is he, you know, is he not watching the press conferences? Is he not bothered? Is he not reading any press? Is it just not part of his world that Jesse Marsh is repeatedly
him out constantly, yeah,
taking
in
a
jovial fashion? We should say that it was in good faith.
It was, yeah. It was tongue in cheek. I do quite like it, that dynamic. The whole Nyonto, Somerville, you know, good kid, bad kid dynamic that Marsh kind of plays into. It's very funny. But Willy Nyonto, I feel like we've talked about him quite a lot, you know, since that really long deadline, long, ridiculous deadline day this summer.
It was a long, ridiculous deadline day.
I'm still on a waiting list to have my PTSD, you know, looked after that.
I'm still catching up on sleep, Graham. So,
because it was largely horrific. But everything he's done since has been the antithesis of that, what that day was, because it's been a pleasant, really pleasant surprise. Now, for European football nerds like yourself who will have seen him and knew kind of what he was about, then maybe it's not such a surprise. But then who knew that he would have the impact, the extent that he's had? You know, that
I don't think anyone did. To tell you the truth, I think, you know, if the club's most decorated scout, who obviously first took a keen liking to Willy Nyonto, I doubt they would have said that within, what is it, 4 or 5 months, that he's effectively one of the first names on the team sheet at present. You know, he's just impacting games left, right, and centre. And it's such a he does it so likeably as well. Like the little moment against Cardiff where he hands a note to Patrick Bamford. Bamford obviously reads it, gives it back to Nyonto to go and put it on the side of the pitch, and he just scrumples it up and pretends to eat it and looks back at Bamford with this cheeky grin on his face. This is a professional football game, Willy. This is no time for tomfoolery. And then
this is a must win.
Sorry, go on.
It's a must win game, Willy. Yeah. Your manager has called this a must win game. It's a tense. There's tension here, Willy. Don't. Yeah. Brilliant.
He's such a likable character. It makes it all the more. It makes it all the better because he's playing such good football as well. May it continue, because during a particularly barren spell in terms of points, he's been a beacon, an oasis in the desert, to say the least. And I think long may it continue.
Well, when you think about his contributions, you know, there was that run to set up Somerville at home to Bournemouth for an incredibly important winner for his manager, you know, for the club. at Liverpool, he went down the left and put in that low cross to find Bamford, who took an awful touch to allow Somerville to score. Then I think of Villa, you know, it was him who set up Bamford, wasn't it? Am I remembering that right?
It might have been, yeah. His run down the left-hand side.
Maybe I just, now when I think of all Leeds goals this season, I just see Nyonto supplying the assist.
He did score against West Ham as well, didn't he? That was his first goal for Leeds.
Scored against West Ham.
Outside the box. Second against Cardiff, which will go under the radar, but just the ability to take that in his stride, cut inside, and then hit it to the near post.
Yeah.
Very adept.
Let's talk about Cardiff then, and Willy Nyonto against Cardiff specifically. Rank these moments then in order of preference. Pretending to eat the note, wrestling with a steward, scoring the volley, and the second goal.
I'm going to go volley first because it was just incredible. I had barely looked up from my screen and it was in the back of the net. 30 seconds or 29 seconds in, just incredible. Eating the note for me, that's that second. That's something you don't see every day. You know, a lot of players will celebrate by grabbing a steward or something, or somebody who kind of is trying to obstruct the celebrations to keep a lid on things. But the note, you very rarely see that. That was so impish. The second goal is great. It's the last in this foursome. But they're all great moments. And to be fair, I can now reveal in an Inside Ellen Road exclusive that the tweet that I made on Wednesday night, which said an unnamed colleague turned to me and said, "Willy Nyonto is the best thing about my life," and then I sort of added, "He has four kids." Graham, can you tell the listeners who was that? Who was saying that incredibly accurate statement?
No, I didn't hear that, I couldn't tell you who that was. He's the great thing about him is, you know, you talk about him like eating the note. To even think to do that in the kind of and I know that Leeds are well up by this point,
and the stress of the moment as well.
But yeah, in the stress of a football game, to think to do that, there's only a few footballers that kind of their mind turns to mischief, you know, in the midst of madness.
Good line. You're going to use that in copy?
I'll note that down. take a note. Ayling would be one. Matthias Klick, obviously another. Gianni Alioski would be another. But him for a different reason, because his mind works in a way that can't be understood, really. It's different, something almost not like a different wiring there. And Nyonto, which is just a really like nice addition to what is already a phenomenal story. But the first goal we do need to address, because you erroneously called it a bicycle kick. And it's not. I don't know how you're riding a bike, but that's not how a bicycle, unless you're on some. Are you getting a bike in Leeds? Are you cutting around on a unicycle? Is that what's going on here?
No, absolutely not, Graham. No.
He produced a scissor kick because his legs moved in a scissor motion. And it obviously, a lot of people's minds, perhaps a little lazier than mine, will go straight to Di Canio. But what I thought of was Jimmy Quinn against the Republic of Ireland in 1993 at Windsor Park, obviously a very famous goal. And it was somewhere in between those two that it fell. But just fantastic. Like the Marsh pointed it out in the press conference afterwards, the little bump, the little hand in the back of the defender to nudge him out of the way, which again reminded me of David Healy on Carlos Puyol when Northern Ireland beat Spain 3-2 at Windsor Park, and Healy got all three goals. Just, you know, separating himself from the defender to have the space, the way he tracked the flight of the ball, great ball from Rodrigo as well. And then the finish, which was just superb, absolutely superb, guided it into the net. And as far as starts go, there isn't, unless you score an overhead from 35 yards, there isn't a better start. Or actually, if you score from the kickoff, you know, because the keeper's out of, there's not a better start to the game. There just isn't. And from that moment, I feel like the stress went out of the situation for Leeds. Mm-hmm. And then we saw we saw good football. I mean, do Leeds United produce that move from their own byline with the one-touch, quick-passing football that cut through Cardiff right through to the middle? Jack Harrison pins his ear back and scampers forward, feeds it to Nyonto, and he drills it in. Do Leeds United score that goal if they've conceded the first goal to Cardiff and the crowd is grumbling and the pressure's on? I don't think they do. I think they do that because their tails were up and because Elland Road was buzzing and 100% with them and the game was going the right way. And it just shows the importance of a good start. And I think Tyler Adams had a lot to do with that because he won possession in the Cardiff half. And then he could have given the ball to Rocca, who was probably looking to play a big switch. But he stormed forward with it. He was like, no, we've got the ball. We're going directly at Cardiff. And that's what led to Rodrigo getting it. So a great start and a goal to grace any cup competition in the world.
I know you're very keen to discuss Matthijs Glik on this podcast at every opportunity. And obviously him going to DC United means that you'll now be limited in that regard. But I think we do need to mention his one-fingered salute to the Cardiff fans as he went on the pitch. Just one final act of Glikhuizen as he was able to bid farewell to Elland Road.
Yeah, I've seen that. But as the wearer of a woolen beanie myself, sometimes they just itch. So for me,
plausible deniability.
For me, there's an element of plausible deniability there. It was ambiguous. No, it wasn't ambiguous in the slightest, was it? It was one of the most obvious and blatant acts of incitement that I think we've seen at Elland Road.
And expertly done after he mutually terminated his contract, so he can't be sanctioned by the English football authorities. So
no,
bravo.
So hopefully there was no one else that currently comes under the governance of the FA at Leeds United who was involved in said incident. You know, anyone maybe coming up with the idea or, you know, provoking, prompting, prodding, to produce such a gesture. It quite often crops up in Championship Manager 0102, the somebody getting banned because they brought the game into disrepute for a gesture. Comes up more often actually in that game than it ever does in real life, I find. It's like glitch in the algorithm, the early algorithm. No, very funny. And I imagine Cardiff fans of a reasonable mind would also find that very funny. I do wonder what the reaction would have been had an opposition player dared to do such a thing to Leeds fans, you know, if he was moving to America and Leeds fans were given it the who are you. Take a bit, give a bit back, you know, it's not such a bad thing, is it? And you don't want kids doing it. So, you know, we'll just leave it there. But I think I laughed.
Full Lampard there, just sort of singing its praises. But no, seriously.
But seriously.
You don't want kids doing it, no.
But seriously, you don't want kids around the world seeing that. Funny.
We should move on. But staying with the FA Cup theme, the fourth round tie against TBC, Accrington or Bournemouth will be televised. Lunchtime kickoff Saturday, 28th of January on BBC One. So no doubt they're hoping for another giant killing there. Have no idea how all of the world's press and media are going to fit into Accrington's Wham Stadium or Bournemouth's Meadow Park, but I'll be sharpening my elbows before I get out the car and trot along to that ground. Graham, you're not going to be there, which, you know, you were going to be sort of my human shield to sort of, I don't know.
You operation get behind the chief football writer. And I also would have incessantly talked about the National League and Chesterfield were it at Boreham Wood, or indeed League One and Chesterfield were it at Accrington Stanley. So perhaps it's a blessing in disguise for you that I won't be around for that one. It's hard to say, isn't it, which the better tie would be. You would imagine that theoretically easier game, you would think, would be Boreham Wood, but also by far the biggest banana skin. You know, that is a Leeds United FA Cup story of woe just waiting to be written, isn't it? You know, it's a histon for the for the year 2023. So it's a game the Leeds are going to have to take very, very seriously, regardless of where they find themselves on that day. And they just have to hope that they have the right attitude from the start, which perhaps they were lacking a little bit at Cardiff, in the right frame of mind. And I suppose it will depend as well a lot on what happens this Sunday against Brentford and what kind of mood everyone is in. Because even with that very emphatic win in the FA Cup, tempered slightly by the two late goals and the one that Michael Dean deigned to bring to the attention of the referee, Thomas Bramall, that could have quite easily been a goal. Even with that emphatic win and the Willy Nyonto stuff and everybody sailing out of Elland Road on a wave of goals and celebrations, I still think Sunday is incredibly important, incredibly pivotal, and a big, big moment for Jesse Marsh. Because as we've said before, whenever a manager's position is weakened in the eyes of fans, as Marsh's has been this season at times, it's really hard to get back on completely level ground, and it does feel like you're never that far away from ructions and grumbling. So I think to carry on a bit of momentum, a win would be absolutely massive. A win would just be massive, full stop, wouldn't it? And it's going to be a difficult one because Thomas Frank would absolutely dearly love to bring Elland Road to a seething ire, and I think Ivan Toney probably would too. So you know that Brentford are going to be very much up for it, and they'll probably cause problems. And for Leeds, it's going to be about not just producing the kind of chance creation that we've seen in the last couple of games, but also stopping the big switch at source and looking after the back post a lot better than they have done in recent weeks and months.
No, I agree with you. I think that's exactly what's going to be important. Jesse Marsh saying that the team worked quite heavily on set pieces today in their run-up to Brentford. So we'll see if that manifests in Sunday's game. Before we go, Graeme, just on a quick score prediction from you for Sunday.
Just before I do that, it would be remiss of me not to mention that Marsh talked today about the report about the players not being with him. Somebody in Austria read it, Austria or Germany, he said. Somebody read it in a foreign title on a foreign website and brought it to his attention, which is very interesting because it was not an established mainstream media outlet that came out with this line, and yet I feel like it's been almost blown up to a proportion that you would have thought that it was the YEP back page or The Athletic. But Marsh made such a point of talking about it after the game against Cardiff in both his broadcast interview and then in his press conference that it has kind of become a story. I just don't know the logic or the wisdom in giving something like this credence. You know, I suppose it is different if we went with a back page that said senior players are on their way to the boardroom to demand the manager's head. Firstly, we would torch our relationship with Leeds United, but secondly, that would be a thing for a manager to address. You know, if he was absolutely adamant it wasn't true, I just don't know if there was a need for him to. But maybe maybe he feels that he's got a right to reply and has to correct the record, especially if it's travelled. But he's absolutely certain the players are with him. Said, in fact, they came to him to say that they were with him, and he said he didn't need that affirmation because he knew. So that was an interesting bit of today's press conference as well, but nothing to do with Brentford and the score, which I'll now come back to. And I think that Leeds will win 3-2 with a late goal.
Okay. Well, I think I was going to go with 2-2 because I think I know another 2-2 draw is not what people want to hear, and I mean it would certainly be better than a 2-1 defeat against Villa, but I just think Brentford do have a lot of quality, and if Leeds are going to be at their best, they're really, really going to have to work hard at stopping them with the counter attacks, and that's something Leeds haven't been good at this season. So I do think there'll be goals. So 2-2 from me and 3-2 from Graeme. That's everything from us on the Inside Elland Road podcast this week. Do head over to the website to read everything that Marsh had to say in today's press conference, and plenty other things as well. But yeah, stay safe, take care, and bye for now. The Inside Ellen Road podcast is sponsored by PR Supplies at Unit 2 Wither Park Industrial Estate in Leeds. PR Supplies, everything for the home.